upon throwing a leg over the border squad.
Oh, he might be out of play for a little while.
Yes, hello and welcome to Footballed, the Wednesday edition of the Fox Football Podcast. I'm Murray Shaw, and joining me, as always, Brenton Speed and Andy Harper. And just like Persija Jakarta in the Asian Champions League last night, we've had our pre-pod meal of a bucket of KFC, a couple of Zinger burgers, and we're ready to rip into another Baldcast. We're going to preview the W League final and discuss the new name for the latest team to join the A League. First of all, hello Brenton Speed, hello Andy Harper, and I notice even after the Asian Cup, where you've spent a lot of time in each other's pockets, you couldn't live without each other, and you've basically spent the entire weekend in each other's pockets.
Melbourne Weekender with Andy Harper. Wouldn't do it any other way.
Romantic and, candlelit dinner.
And great to be with you. A bit more KFC. Are they jumping on board yet?
No.
Macca's was once in, sponsoring podcasts, weren't they?
Well, or? The amount of mentions that Harps gave of KFC last night, I thought surely that maybe he's got a sponsorship on the side.
Little bucket
Has
on the way
home.
Has
he got one of those like black cards that you can take into McDonald's where you get KFC for free?
I couldn't make my way out of the commentary box last night for the mountain of dinner boxes that were waiting outside the front. Present, by the way.
For the drumstick.
Are you present, Brendan?
I'm present.
Yeah. And I'm present in person.
Yes, you are in person. It's great to have you here and not on the ranch.
And well, I just have become, as you've sort of suggested, so attached to Brenton Speed that I can't stay away from the bloke. So I've driven 3 hours for the privilege of sitting in the Baldcast room.
Yep, I'm not surprised. Mm. That's the effect
it's
have.
A magnetic attraction.
That's the effect that you two have. How was your weekend together?
Well, it was brilliant. In fact, candlelit dinner, the closest we got to that was queuing up in the 7-Eleven on the corner outside the hotel to get a Kit Kat and a chocolate milk. Does that count as romance?
I thought you were going to say a Chico roll.
And I'd left the car because Andy was the driver. So I walked into the hotel and went, oh, no, I'll go get my little knickknacks and snacks or whatever. And I'm in the 7-Eleven. And some bloke walks past me, and I didn't bat an eyelid. I was grabbing my stuff, and then I look up, and sure enough, it's Harp A right next to me.
I was stalking him. But the problem is, I was leaving the car with concierge, as you do in when you're on the road, and I noticed the not insignificant figure of B Speed, this silhouette walking through the hotel foyer, straight past me.
Right.
Just totally blanked me. I thought, he's got the Tom tits.
Yeah.
So I'm the, and never do you take on the Speed when he's got the Tommies.
No.
So I just followed him up the laneway. It was a dark laneway, a rather spooky laneway, to be honest. It was Jack the Ripper scenario, and we end up in the 7-Eleven.
Did you see me in the 7-Eleven?
I followed you the whole way.
So you knew I was in there, and you thought I was still brushing.
It's rewind. I noticed you walk straight past me in the foyer.
Yeah, but I didn't realise it was you in the 7-Eleven.
I know. Yeah. You didn't realise it was me.
So you didn't bother saying hello.
Anyway, we're going over old territory. Look at you.
This is just classic podcast, isn't it? Basically, you're allowing people
deal.
Into the lives of a married couple.
We deal.
I
we
didn't
deal.
See you. You didn't say me. You didn't say hello to me.
You didn't ask how my day was or offer me a cup of tea.
You don't care. You don't care.
We deal with the big things on the Baldcast.
And then the slice of pizza is always magnificent on the way home when you get the individual slices halfway down the laneway.
Yeah, no,
you know what? You know why Speedy brushed you? What? He had food on his mind. He had food on his mind. It wouldn't have mattered if he'd seen Barack Obama walk out of the... He
was I don't know how he had any hand space for a slice of pizza, because they're not small. I know the place he was talking about.
Mm.
I'm not sure how he had any room on his hand for pizza, because he was pretty loaded up with Kit Kats.
Mm.
Got to use your pockets.
Well, that's been an enlightening first pizza, 5 minutes of the
Baldcast.
Pizza
in the pockets.
my apologies to everyone who's listened. And if you listen very carefully, you can actually hear people turning off the podcast right now.
I thought that was crickets.
Exactly. All right, the Asian Champions League began for the Australian teams last night. Harps, you were behind the microphone.
Yes.
Let's get a quick summation of Newcastle 3, Persija KFC Jakarta 1. Newcastle, and obviously now advancing to play Kashima for a spot in the round, regular round.
Well, I thought it was a pretty poor performance from Newcastle, actually. Just a little shout-out to Benny Homer. Did a great job. One of the younger commentators you're bringing through, Belford, and his... what?
The people out there in podcast land know why you're calling.
No,
it's a very intimate forum.
Move on.
Murray.
Yes.
Murray. Are you doing a very good job bringing on some of these young Cub callers? And Benny did a great job. So that was a bright spot of the night. The result was a bright spot for Newcastle. The performance I found from Newcastle frustrating, sloppy, just before kickoff, it was my car, when I got out of the car at McDonald Jones Stadium, said 42 degrees. And it didn't cool off that much before kickoff. Once the game was into the belly of the beast sort of thing, it was much more pleasant. But it was hot. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. Then there was a subtext or the subplot of Marko Simic being in court all day for that allegation and subsequent arrest from the Australian Federal Police. And it was a bit bizarro world, actually, and the Jets finishing and their sloppiness just added to that. But thankfully they got the result from an Australian viewpoint. And the question for me going in, Speedy, was Ernie Merrick had to make a decision on which foreigner he leaves out, and he opted to leave out Jaia and include Matt Redenton. And, well, Redenton did well when he came on, but I don't know, did it sufficiently deal with that issue? Do you need to carry another midfielder at the expense of having someone who might be able to ignite your attack? I don't know. I don't know if that answer was sufficiently dealt with last night, but I'm very happy the Jets are through.
Jaia has been underwhelming, I suppose.
Who hasn't been in the Jets' attack, though?
Yeah. What about Roy O'Donovan last night? What was going through his head? Did anything go through his head when he took on that strike when the ball was being returned to the goalkeeper? Mm. What would have happened there in the 89th
international
minute?
Incident?
Yeah.
Massive?
Yeah.
Mate, part of me doesn't have a problem with a player doing that, because this, I've got an issue with this convention of a player going down, stopping the game. It goes on forever.
I think we're fully aware of your problem you have with it.
And so, you know, part of me didn't mind Roy O'Donovan doing that. Part of me thought, well, if you're going to play on, I think you deserve to offer the information to your opponents. Listen, you guys, I'm going to play on here. And so that he potentially hijacked that situation would have created something very sticky indeed. But
Newcastle have then allowed them to go down and score an equaliser, do you think? You think the game would have just been 2-1, tough titties?
Mm.
Really?
Hmm.
I do.
Oh, I can't. Well, who knows? Thankfully, apropos his night in general, Roy, he hit the ball straight at the keeper, who was a good keeper anyway, didn't need that sort of help.
Do well.
It caught everyone by surprise. And Demi Petratos very obviously has just lobbed the ball back to Jakarta for you to have it. And before he knows it, it was one of the more direct, complete passes that Demi made for the entire night.
Just going back to Ben Homer for a second.
Yeah.
When we've rostered Ben on, we thought we'll ease him into his commentary duties.
Yeah.
We'll give him a few games that should be fairly basic. A
couple of zingers.
So we gave him the Central Coast match on New Year's Eve that ended up being about a 35-minute fill because the goalpost got knocked out.
Yeah,
and then poor old Benny last night gets extra time and a fairly average game of football between Procedure and Newcastle.
Oh, he did well.
Thrown in at the deep end, he's doing outstandingly well. Couple of other results from the Asian Champions League last night, one particularly for you, Speedy. Hanoi of Vietnam into the final stage of qualifying after a win over Bangkok United. They now play Shandong Luneng. And Perak of Malaysia beat Kitchi of Hong Kong on penalties, and they now play Ulsan Hyundai. And just like we did last week, Speedy, who is the ex-A-League player playing for Kitchi in Hong Kong? Well done. Boom.
Oh, Matty Smith's going to Hong Kong now.
Yeah, and what happened to him last night?
Did he get sent off?
Sent off, yeah, correct.
On debut?
I wouldn't have thought so.
I think so.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, near enough to debut.
Sent off on debut.
Because I'm linked in with Matt Smith.
Good man, Matt.
You refresh LinkedIn every now and then, you see where Matt Smith's playing his football.
Good man. Now, we should point out, so Newcastle now travel to Japan midweek next week, Tuesday night. Australian time to play last year's champions of the Champions League, Kashima Antlers, so that's not going to be an easy task.
And Merrick said last night at the end of his interview that we'll play the under-16s on Friday night because the priority is the Champions League. And when you look at the A-League ladder and the prospect of taking your first team to Japan to face Kashima, does that definitely become the priority?
You can guarantee Jaia will probably start on Friday night, one would say then too. I think the Victory too are going to have some interesting calls to make ahead of their Champions League campaign. Back to the usual problem of which foreigners do you leave out?
Yeah.
I assume they'll probably leave out Raul Baena, take Niedermeyer with them because they'll obviously take Honda.
How many can you pick?
3+1, isn't it?
Yeah, so the one is Barbarossa's.
Yeah, well, you've got Barbarossa's, but you've got Honda who's...
It's
the plus one. Yeah. So you're going to take Barbarossa's, you're going to take Toivonen, and then you've got to choose between...
Baena.
Niedermeyer. Yeah.
Interesting.
I think you always take the centre half, especially where the Victory central midfield.
Mm.
You've got Valeri, Hope.
But then if you've got Niedermeyer, who's had some recent injuries, do you want him getting on planes for, you know, 18-hour return trips to and from Asia.
And then Tommy Dean.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah. I would leave Bayena behind and take Niedermayer.
I'm not convinced about Niedermayer, his durability. I mean, we've barely seen him this season. How can you make a decision on a guy like that in this setting when he's just barely played? Whereas at least in with Bayena, we've seen what he can bring. And Lee Broxham, he can just play anywhere. So, I don't know, I'd possibly be leaning towards the Spaniard. Not because he's necessarily a better player, but it's very difficult to make an assessment on Niedermayer. He's just missed too much football.
Righto, player you enjoyed watching over the last week. We always start this way, but we did the Asian Champions League briefly there just to kick us off. But the player you enjoyed watching over the last week had a fairly large bearing on the outcome of a result last Friday night.
Massively, and I've been banging on about this kid for a while and thought he should have been playing in the John Aloisi era. That's Dylan Wenzel Halls. And did he show a little method for other players to copy? And that is to just touch the hair of Ryan Grant, get a feel for it, and grab some of the superpowers that come from the Ryan Grant mullet. And then he bangs in a goal from the top of the box that was outstanding.
This is sounding like a bloke who dreams about hair at
night. Of course, we have to talk about
it. He didn't like it one little bit, did he, Ryan Grant?
No.
The hair got grabbed. And
mental disintegration.
And yeah, when other referees around the world, may, if a reaction comes from Grant there, do you book the player for inciting it, for grabbing the hair?
Probably.
You know, if that was a dreadlock that you grab, is it a yellow card? But because it's an ugly mullet, you don't get a yellow card.
Beauty's in the eye of the beholder, Speed.
Interesting one.
Just on Dylan Wenzel Halls, we might get to this a little bit later, but another player out of the NPL comes into the A-League, takes his chance. Elvis Kamsober is another one. Matt Miller's another one.
Actually, a couple of these guys you've mentioned have come out of A-League youth systems and played in the NPL competition. That's true of Wenzel Halls, right? So you can't say he's not been in the A-League stream. Elvis Kamsober, you certainly can.
Yep.
So we should delineate this argument on that basis, because the A-League teams do play in the NPL, but I don't think that makes them NPL players, if you know what I mean. Mm. Your point is going out beyond the A-League into NPL clubs and finding talent.
Jordan Murray?
Yeah.
Mm. So the point being, Central Coast go and get two young players out of Sheffield.
Yeah, out of the Sheffield Shield, as it was reported in Australia. Can you believe it?
Really?
Yeah.
would they not be better off scouring the NPL to try and find someone?
Mate, how long have the Mariners been around? How long have the Mariners been around?
For the entire A-League.
Right. How long's that?
This is season 14.
Is that not enough time to have started producing your own talent?
And to be fair to the Mariners...
Around the league, not just the Mariners now, but you did ask about them.
Yeah,
we shouldn't be bringing Sheffield Shield players in.
Mm.
We've got cricketers deciding the fate of the national women's team.
Tenuous link, but I like it. Harps, your player that you enjoyed watching over the last week.
Christine Nairn.
Sure.
And I know you jumped on her bandwagon pretty early on, but outside of the star and just the stunning Sam Kerr, she'd have to be the next best player in the league, I reckon. As a technician, as a game aware, she is such a good player. Christine Nairn of Melbourne Victory. She was great in the losing team. Fantastic game on the weekend. And there's some super, super talent in the W League. And I reckon she's right up there. So she was my player of the week.
I think she's unbelievable to watch. I was saying the same thing. I was saying maybe she's the best player in the league.
Hmm. Well, I'll take the player who probably will be voted the best player in the league, and that is Sam Kerr. And I implore anyone who's a football fan in Sydney to get out to Kogra on Saturday afternoon, 4:30 kickoff, and watch Sam Kerr in action. Because I don't think she'll be back in the W League next season.
Really?
I don't. I think she'll probably head to Europe. I think she's turned down a lot of offers to play for some big teams in Europe, Chelsea being one of them.
Has that widely been written or speculated on, or is that Murray Shaw exclusive hunch?
No, that's my exclusive hunch, that she won't be at... she'll go to the World Cup and then she'll probably link with a team in Europe and we won't see her in the W League next season. This is, if you like, the Winx of women's football. Winx, who constantly appears on the front pages and back pages of newspapers around the country, and quite rightly so, given the achievements. Sam Kerr's on the same level in terms of dominating a sport. And We've probably got a few more chances to see her on our shores, obviously, during the Four Nations tournament that the Matildas will be playing in. She had 80 touches in that game on Sunday. That's the sort of numbers that a midfielder would get.
No. We need to flesh this where does Sam play discussion out a little bit. I want to ask you reasoning, but there was a moment, well, there are plenty of moments watching her play on the weekend, but there was a moment when she picked the ball up in midfield, turned, and you think you're watching Messi and Ronaldo, and people are going to think I'm crazy for saying that. The relativities apply, of course, but she is as uncontainable as those guys.
Yep.
Athletically, technically, drive for goal. It's exhilarating watching her play and to be in that stadium when Sam Kerr is playing, and like a lot of other talent in the W League, but she is the number one, is just incredible. So grab the opportunity while you can, Muzz. You're right. But let's get back to why would she go to Europe? I mean, explain to people what Europe has that the W League in concert with American competition doesn't. Is it a financial thing? Is it the experience of playing in Europe? And if it's a financial thing, they're going to have to be coughing up some decent money to trump what the Australian game has prepared to invest in her this year and might even grow from this point on.
Yep. But look, I think she'd probably make, and I'm guessing, about $350,000 playing for Perth Glory, which includes money out of the marquee fund that Fox Sports has provided to the FFA, I think she could make well and truly more than that in Europe. And the other thing is...
Have you heard that?
What do Europeans get paid?
Yeah, like, no, I'm hearing sort of like figures around $500,000 that she could be making by playing in, you know, some of these big leagues around the country. And I think we saw that in the voting for the best female player in the world. If she wants to win these sort of awards, she needs to be getting overseas and playing in Europe and playing against the big European players, because people aren't paying enough attention to what's going on in the NWSL and also in the A-League.
Because it's very Eurocentric.
Correct. So if you want to challenge yourself, you've got to challenge yourself against the best players. Mm. And I'd imagine that's what will happen after the World Cup. Mm.
And what club did you speculate? Did you say Chelsea?
Yeah.
Do you think England? Because I think the powerhouse is Lyon, isn't it? The French team.
Yep.
And Germany provides some amazing teams.
Spain has just started to take it quite seriously.
Chidiac's playing at Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Well, I would say if she wants to win the World Player of the Year, you've got to go to a Lyon or something like that.
Winning the World Cup? Would that help?
That would help enormously.
Yeah.
Well, where's Marta played? The perennial best woman player in the world over the course, not every year, but she's won the bulk of them, certainly. Where did she play?
Played a lot of Orlando Pride lately.
Yep, a lot of America. Maybe a lot of her her success in regards to those accolades comes from playing for the Brazil national team and all the attendant benefits that reputation bestows upon you. But, you know, the European Women's League is growing and grow at a force, but this is a very realistic challenge for the W League to beef itself up and become a comparable league. Because, you know, mate, you're sort of referring, I guess, to your big club brands based on men's football. But in the women's football circuit, they know where the good competition is.
Yep.
That's why they gravitate towards those competitions. And we've seen a good influx in the W League over the last few years. Mm. And, you know, in a comparative sense, for the investment it might take to get the W League up to the next level, why wouldn't Sam Kerr perhaps be part of that?
Mm. I think you hint to a bigger discussion, and that is that obviously a lot of players that are playing in the W League aren't fully professional. Mm. So you've got teams that train at 7 o'clock in the morning because most of them have then got to go off to work. And the W League probably now needs to look at taking that next step of being slightly more professional, which obviously is what's happening in Europe. And speaking to a few of the American players who come out and play here, they fully believe that too, that, you know, that it's not, the W League isn't as at a professional level as is over in
But this is, the States. You'd imagine, for the relative cost involved, that's more achievable, right? Mm. To make big ground on the W
League. Yeah, I agree.
Is an achievable thing, and to have a fund to get, you know, some of the world's top players here rather than us watching them in Europe, again, in the relativities, maybe that's something achievable for football in this country.
And Marta's done a lot of her work in Sweden, playing for various clubs there.
They're hardly big ticket items, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's continue this conversation and just quickly look at the grand final. Is it a case, Speedy, you will be behind the microphone with Sarah Walsh on Saturday afternoon? If you can stop Sam Kerr, you can stop Perth. And more to the point, is it possible to stop Sam Kerr?
Well, the other thing I want to mention, re-Sam Kerr with this Perth Glory team, is Rachel Hill, the number nine. I don't think I've ever seen two players on a better wavelength in Australian football, ever. Two players that understand what each other are doing and what they want to...
Allsop and Thompson?
No, not having it. I'm having Hill and Kerr as the best combo ever, who know what each other are doing. I asked Sam Kerr about it after the game the other day, and she said, at training, we just make the same runs as each other. We don't even have to talk about it, but we know where each other is going to run because that's where I would run. So I play the ball, and then there she is. And you saw it the other day when they played that 1-2 near halfway. It went back to Hill. A lot of players would have turned sideways, gone backwards, recycled possession, frustrate the hell out of fans and supporters watching on. Hill goes, Kerr's given it to me. She's going to wrap around, bend around, and I'm just going to play the ball over the top. Kerr is away. And then the Hill goal at the back post. Kerr, as like players would most probably cross that to the near post, it gets cut out, taken by the goalkeeper. Kerr somehow stands it up to the back post. Who's there to head it in? Rachel Hill. It's an unbelievable partnership. Mm. That's what you got to stop. You got to stop the pair of them.
Mm. Look, Speedy's right. They're a great combination. Whether they're the best ever, of course, these are the sorts of discussions that burn on, but they're very, very good and they're fantastic to watch. And it does bring in to play Alana Kennedy and Elizabeth Ralston. Mm. Now, I don't know that anyone's really spoken much about Elizabeth Ralston. But
she's having a good season.
She is a fabulous player. There's not much of her out of Camden. Same sort of area as Alana as well. I don't know if there's something in the water down there because Amy Harrison's from that part of the world. They're throwing out some fantastic female players. But Ralston is one of the most composed defenders. You've yet to see her flustered. Mate, in 40-degree heat, she's like got an ice suit on and a good technician. I don't know if athletically she's going to be able to keep tabs on a Hill-Kerr combination, but who can? But her game awareness is and her positional sense is going to be a very big thing. And then her partner back there, Alana Kennedy, who is just a fabulous player and offers her own goal threat and danger from set pieces. So on those two axes, a lot of the game is going to be decided, I reckon. It'll be compulsive viewing this grand final. There's no question about it.
And Sam Kerr, the best player in Australia, but Savannah McCaskill is fast becoming one of the best players the United States has on offer. She's part of the US national team. She's playing unbelievable football week in, week out with this Sydney FC team. And remember, she arrived on the opening day of the season. She was announced as a player and she's become a superstar. So she's the player that Perth have to stop.
Yep, and we talked about her after that first game of the W League season, the Sydney Derby. She then probably plateaued a little bit, but she's certainly come good. This is McCaskill we're talking about.
The Gamecock.
Yes, from the North Carolina?
South Carolina.
And has come good in recent weeks and was fantastic against a Brisbane team who, it must be said, and I was at Redcliffe on Sunday night, Brisbane were a little bit disappointing. That's the second time in as many years that they've gone out at this stage. Last year they were premiers, or last season they were premiers and went out at the first hurdle, and this time around they weren't at their best against.
Is this a mark against Mel Andreata, of whom I've got a massive opinion? I think she's a great coach.
Mm.
But does this start and stop then with the coach? Same stage of both seasons.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who else are you going to blame? Mm. Obviously the players, or it's Mel. Mm. But they just weren't at the races, really, were they?
Well, is that true? They had plenty of chances to score, Brisbane. I don't know if it's that open and shut, actually.
Mm. And she has done a fantastic job with that team.
She's a great coach.
She's a brilliant coach.
She is a very, very good coach.
She's a future Matildas coach.
I believe so. Mm. I would like to think so. I don't think there was a huge discrepancy between the teams, actually. I mean, Sydney deserved winners, but Brisbane I didn't see as being a massive basket case. Indeed, as I'm watching that game, Speedy's best friend in women's football, Jenna McCormack, she has to be in the Matildas squad for the World Cup. I'm a signatory to the Speed petition on that one. I think she's outstanding. And Alira Toby as one for the future. There is a discussion around women's football that once this current generation start going off into the sunset, there is a concern that there's not a group coming through.
Mm.
I'm not quite sure what that's based on, because there look to be a lot of good, young, talented players coming through Matilda's level in the A-League, Ellie Carpenter, just to name one. I'm going to suggest that Alira Toby should go to the World Cup as well as a development prospect, not with the presumption that she's going to seriously challenge for a starting berth. But there is an occasion when you need a bit of spark off the bench and some speed. She has grown magnificently this season, and I would be earmarking her as next generation Matilda, and so make the investment now with the World Cup coming up. Alira Toby out of Brisbane.
The other impressive player I thought for Sydney, another one of your favourites, Harps, was Sophia Huerta, who had a great game, one of her best games
of the
season.
Stoked that she got the goal. Yeah. I think her season and her style of play deserves an accolade like that. It was fantastic.
And the reason why Speedy is one of the best in the business is that he has already discovered that back in 2003 in the NSL Grand Final, the captains leading the teams out on the Grand Final day were Bobby Despotovsky for Perth and Ante Juric for Sydney Olympic.
Hmm.
And now, 13 years later... 16 years later, sorry, they're coaching the W League.
So what
Grand
you're saying is Brendan Speed doesn't just dream about mullets at night.
It wasn't even a hair issue. Final word, Speedy, how do you see that one playing out?
And on the players coming through, Letitia McKenna was one of the best on the pitch the other day for Perth. She's 16.
Mm.
And her younger sister is in the junior Matildas.
Mm. So there is talent coming.
Their parents, an Aussie rules footballer and a netballer. Mm. And they turned up one day and said, oh, wouldn't mind having a crack at... bit of soccer down the road. Okay, yep, sure. And here they are, both in the W League and young Matilda's set up. So look out for Letitia McKenna, who set up, I think, two goals, two assists to her name the other day, the 16-year-old, and also Shay Evans. Will she be coming off the bench? Or does Lisa Devanna, who didn't feature on the weekend, come back into the Sydney FC squad? What are you hearing on that front, Muzz?
She was definitely, obviously, injured last week. But I imagine she'll be busting a gut to make sure that she's available.
Against Perth.
To be fair, Princess Beanie, in her absence, has been particularly good in the last few weeks, taking the chance and cutting in, very much like her brother.
Mm.
Cuts in from the left, got a good shot on her, always makes herself available. Mm. She's been great.
Yep.
All right, A-League. The news today is that the new team out of Victoria, I suppose we have to say, that will contest the A-League next season has come up with a name and some colours. Western United, they'll be known as, and they'll play in green and black. What's your take?
Well, that colour scheme is an obvious one that hasn't been picked up yet. Great.
It wasn't so much the colour scheme I was asking.
Well, you did say the colours and the name, so I've gone for the low-hanging
fruit.
This
isn't some sort of queer eye for a straight guy when you're going to give me, you know, well, how it's going to look on them and design the shirt.
What was your question?
What's your take on the name? And no, we should point out with the name that this was a poll for which name was preferred, and they took the winner of the poll, is my understanding.
Other options were?
Western Athletic.
Western Warriors.
Which
went down well with the Geelong Warriors.
And what was the Pride?
And the WA Sheffield Shield team.
Mm. Mm. And what was the Pride one?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
No. There's Western Pride in Queensland.
Yeah.
In the NPL, the Ipswich thing. So, yeah. Well, okay, thanks for clarifying the question, because it was a double barry. So what do we make of the name and the colours? So I went for the low hand, just to cover myself.
All right.
So green and black's reasonable. It's going to be good. Right?
Yep. Who else has green and black on the world stage?
Good question. Celtic did play in an away strip of green and black stripe.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot. This is the point. There's Real Betis in Spain.
They go green and white, don't they?
They have a green. Yeah, yeah. Palmeiras in Brazil have a green. Yeah. I'm thinking the only the biggest ones I can think of. I can't think of green in English football of the top teams. English football clubs are very heavily red, blue and white, red and white, etc. But so... this was a colour. Let's get on to the name, because you don't want the queer eye for a straight guy.
Do you want to stick on colours for a sec? I did read somewhere today that...
oh, it's okay now. Now you've got something to say,
They want it to be predominantly green, and I hope this isn't the case, but the FFA was concerned that might interfere with virtual pitch side advertising. I hope that's not the case.
Mm. Well, but the name. Well, you know, I've spoken with Lou Sticker about this topic, and... it's what the punters wanted there. I'm not a fan of these generic references, but I'm far from me to rain on their parade. It's incumbent upon all of us to get behind this venture and excited about it.
Mm.
The only thing I've
Absolutely.
Said, what I've said to the organisers is the trend in world sport, from the way I'm watching it, is to actually have a more identifiable geographic reference. And Western is one of these vague ones. That's my problem with it. But if that's what the punters want, then support it. What I have said, however, is that in the meantime, I think, which some of the clubs in the A-League have done, some haven't, you've got to organically develop some other sort of reference, a nickname. And I think the best example in world football of this is Arsenal, which of course started out its life as a football club as the Woolwich Arsenal. Well, no one knows them as that anymore. Mm. This whole exercise of cultivating a specific identity is embodied there. And I think Western United is going to have to go. My advice to them would be start this process sooner rather than later and see where you go.
If I said United to you, in reference to the A-League at the moment, what club are you thinking of?
Adelaide.
Yeah, same here. Mm. So if we're now talking, you know, next season it'll be United versus City.
Mm.
I'm confused. I'm like, is that Adelaide or well, that's up to Western United?
Yeah, that's a good point you raise, Muzz, and it's totally up to them how they communicate.
My other concern with Western United is that, should they qualify for the Champions League and they head across to play FC Tokyo, for example, in the Asian Champions League, the fans of FC Tokyo are like, Western United, is that Western Australia, Western Victoria, Western New South Wales, Western Sydney? Where is that? What region of Australia is that?
It's exactly my problem with it. I think Super Rugby has been becalmed by a few things. One of them is these vague names that just mean nothing. So, at any rate,
and tell me, how did the poll work? Because could anyone vote on this?
Oh, I didn't. I don't know about that. That's a good one, actually. Because,
or is it only members, people who've signed up as members of the club?
I don't know.
It's on the Herald Sun website.
It was certainly
anyone,
that.
So anyone can vote.
Yeah, we'll have to. We should take that as homework
and
find out exactly if it was people who registered interest in the club and therefore their ideas were canvassed, or it was just carte blanche. Anyone who's got not any sort of idea, just give it a go. We'll see. I'll ask. We'll dig around.
One of their first major signings is Josh Risden, who has had probably, you'd say, a troubled season for Western Sydney. He's obviously got Tate Russell in that position as well. What does Risden do? What does Babbel do with Risden for the rest of the season now, knowing that he's not going to be there next season? Speedy, would you just persist with Tate Russell and there's a lot of raps on?
Oh, they're not going to make the top six, are they, the Wanderers? And they want to make the top six next season in their new stadium. So you want to look to the future. Josh Risden, very handy player. I mean, I don't know about indifferent season. He went to the Asian Cup. He's had a few injury problems, but he's still been handy for the Wanderers at times, getting forward. So handy signing, getting a Socceroo already on the books at this stage for Western United. Congratulations to them on that front. But I think Tate Russell starting every game at right back looks pretty obvious.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. It's got to happen. Tate Russell's shown plenty. Josh Risden, like Rolly Bonavazio, I noticed this morning has been linked to Popovich in Perth again. But for Josh being the focus of this discussion, he got hit by that Popovich exit saga. You know, he was recruited by Popovich to the Western Sydney Wanderers and never got the chance to do that, to play under Popovich. And the Wanderers have been in a tailspin since. That's the fact of it. And Josh has done well not to go down the gurgler completely when other players have. So he's held a level, as evidenced by the fact that he went to World Cup, he's gone to the Asian Cup, and you've got to, amidst the difficulties of the Wanderers situation at the moment, that speaks volumes, I think, for Josh Risden.
Mm.
But he doesn't play this season. If he's going to go, it's got to be investing in Tate Russell, who's shown that he can handle himself.
So the two first signings for Western United are Josh Risden and Panagiotis Kone, the Greek international. Harps, who were the first three signings for the Western Sydney Wanderers?
Aaron Moy, Kwabi Abena and Tarek Elrich.
And why were they the first three signings?
Because they are local boys.
Have they missed a trick here in not signing someone from the region as one of their...
Not announcing.
Or not announcing, yeah.
Yeah, possibly. Mind you, the marquee discussion, and you're right in the middle of this, Muzz, with your job here at Fox Sports, you how central the whole marquee concept is to the positioning of clubs.
Mm.
So to swoop on a marquee like that is and announce it, you got to understand why they did it. Josh Risden's a current Socceroo. if the Wanderers were in the market for a current Socceroo, I reckon they would have dumped that name on board quickly as well. But your point about locals, well, let's see what they got. I mean, they might have signed people that they can't announce yet. These guys at the time for the Wanderers were all certainly were available to be announced.
Yep.
And it did make sense for the whole local focus. Look, the Wanderers did their business expertly. Let's make no mistake about this. When they set that club up, they did it expertly. That was a part of their expertise, those announcements. One of the broader questions is why the game has been so shy in copying the launch strategy of the Wanderers as an expansion philosophy since.
Liam Reddy today, the Perth Glory goalkeeper, said that Diego Castro is the best international or import to play in the history of the A-League. He was, you blokes saw him firsthand last Sunday for Perth Glory. He was outstanding, and he's already, I think, raced into a share of the lead for the Alex Tobin Award, the Fox Sports Player of the Year already. And I don't think anyone's won that twice, and his chance of actually becoming the first player to win that twice. Liam Reddy makes a good point, but it's obviously a discussion point.
He's trying to wind up Andy Harper, clearly, because Thomas Broich is Andy's number one, I think. And it's hard to argue with what Broich did. Two-time Johnny Warren medalist or just the one?
Definitely one.
But he should have got it the first year when with the great
Marcus Flores
got it.
Yeah.
And then he wins the championships. Diego Castro hasn't won a championship yet. He can get into the conversation if he wins this championship.
Yep.
Yeah, that's my view. I mean, at this point in these discussions, you run the risk of people thinking you're saying player A is no good and player B is good. We're talking about two sensational players. And Castro is worth the price of admission on him.
On your TV to watch Diego Castro.
He's just, and you know what? Sometimes he makes defenders look like they're watching television rather than defending him. He's incredible. He's incredible, but you got to start getting some silverware. Your big players have to deliver silverware. He's delivered a lot of excitement, a lot of thrills, but until Perth break the duck, which I think, you know, they will this year, then Diego can seriously march into that discussion. But, you know, Speedy's right. Thomas is my number one still.
And Broich, yeah, it was a two-time Johnny Warren medalist for the German maestro and three championships.
Yeah, I'll still take Thomas Broich as well. So that's unanimous, which is quite...
Yeah, get that up, you Liam Reddy.
Which is quite rare for this podcast. It's hardly surprising that Liam's sticking up for one of his teammates. Daniel Garb and Simon and Bruce Gitte on Monday's version of the Fox Football podcast. Garby threw up the point that is Mike Mulvey getting off a little bit lightly at the Central Coast Mariners. They are statistically the worst team that we've seen in A-League history. And there hasn't been a lot of discussion about whether Mike's job's under threat. Bruce Gitte made the point, but it's the Mariners, you know. You know, we sort of expect that they're going to struggle, et cetera, et cetera. So what do you make of that?
Well, I don't make much of Bruce's comment, to be honest. I mean, love Bruce. But that's we can't allow any club to just be in the, oh, well, it's just them.
I think
category.
Bruce's point more was...
Or have I misread what you said?
Bruce's point more was it's a club issue, not a coaching issue. And
right. And
to be fair, Bruce has been coached by Mike Mulvey, I think, at Gold Coast, might have been, while he was there. So he obviously knows Mike and knows what sort of coach he is.
But so long as his comments don't in any way just say that, oh, well, Club X is a write-off, we don't expect anything more of them. Quite the contrary. We expect the maximum out of all our clubs. I reckon this discussion about Mike Mulvey, well, whether he's got off lightly or not, not my focus. I think what's more interest is the difference between statistics and what you watch. This is not the poorest team I've seen in the A-League.
No doubt.
Right. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So this is so like the dark old days of the Knights in New Zealand and all that sort of stuff. But that was getting seriously depressing. Now, they obviously didn't generate the same stats that Mulvey's Mariners were. They've been in a lot of games.
They clearly weren't getting thrashed.
No. Look, they've been in a lot of games, but there is a problem at the club, having just said what I said, that they've got to get this thing fixed, and mediocrity is not acceptable. Is Mike Mulvey a custodian and a believer in mediocrity? Well, he tells us not at the start of the season.
And it gets back to Mike Charlesworth. Is he investing enough in the club? How much would they be paying? What's the minimum they can pay for their salary cap, for instance?
Harps would know better.
Around the 2.8 million mark? between the whole squad or something like that?
Well, it's the floor. You got to spend whatever the floor is, 80 or 85% of the cap you got to spend.
Yeah. And in comparison to other clubs, they'd be a million, 5 million, 7 million behind in what they're paying in salaries.
Who knows?
To some of the big guns like the Melbourne Cities and the Sydney FCs.
Does that necessarily matter? Like, you're just saying the team that spends the most wins?
Well, a lot. It gives them a big head start. And if the Mariners are there running off the smell of an oily rag, which has always been the allegation,
Newcastle made a grand final last year. They're clearly not spending.
No, I get the spending thing to me is more what you build around the team. You know, how well serviced is
football department.
And the teams that scrimp on that are the teams that become a season by season proposition. Mm. Now, why do Melbourne and Sydney, to name two, are constantly challenging now after the initial decade of coming and going, have built these powerful clubs because they've invested in the programs and hopefully with more to come. The other clubs that don't make that investment are seriously a season by season proposition. And at the peak and trough, which no salary cap mechanism can cater for, right? Unless you've invested and consistently around the things that support the team, then you're just sailing. You're really sailing in choppy waters. You don't know where the wind's coming from. You just hope that someone can do something.
And I brought it up on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, whenever it was, saying that Ben Kennedy, for mine, is not a first-choice goalkeeper and shouldn't be right now. So that's one area where Mulvey has probably failed, not replacing Ben Kennedy or not finding someone to come in and be a better goalkeeper than what Kennedy's a great fella. Great guy,
he's been a great keeper.
Yeah, but I just...
So what's gone wrong this year? And maybe this gets to the point around the support.
I think last year he was ordinary too.
But is it the Mariners, right? So that's what I'm saying.
I think he should be stopping a lot of the goals that go in, him personally.
Yeah, I'm not disputing that. Yeah. He's made some horrible errors, right? But a guy who wasn't as error-prone... Maybe this gets to what's around the team and how disciplined the training is.
You're saying he's a function of the system.
Possibly so. Mm. Yeah, but these questions are what remain unanswered around the fans of the Mariners who are just desperate for their team to get back to
their own glory. So no matter who's the coach, players that go to the Mariners come out worse. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Yeah.
This is the greatest exercise. I'm putting words in someone.
Well, if you're saying he's a function of the system, that's what you're saying.
I'm asking if that's a possibility.
Mm.
Because, you know, Ben Kennedy wasn't so error-prone. Before he came. So what's happened? Has Ben dropped his game? Is he passed it? Is his training not good enough? Is the goalkeeper coaching there not as specific enough that's pressing the buttons for him? Because he has exposed the team through his errors. And then by extension, he as a goalkeeper is being brutally exposed at the moment. Horrible mistakes. Same down the road at the Wanderers, as I said, with Vedran Janjetovic. Now, what's going on around there that these repeated errors are taking place?
Finally, Speedy, did you catch any of Manchester United PSG this morning?
I did.
What did you make of it? 2-0 win for PSG.
Yeah, the pace of
no
Mbappe.
No Neymar, no Cavani.
Yeah, Mbappe came out smelling roses, scored a wonderful goal. Ashley Young is just an ordinary footballer now, absolutely ordinary. He captained Manchester United. He's the right back. He's slow as a wet week. He let that goal in, basically. The cross came in and he was half-hearted trying to close it down. Mbappe scores and Ashley Young never gets a mention. Young could have been sent off as well for shoulder charging Di Maria off the pitch at one stage. The referee actually gave yellows in the first half for yellow card challenges, right?
Mm.
And they were flummoxed. Like the commentators, they couldn't believe that yellow cards were being shown for yellow card offences so early on. I mean, because they don't do it in the Premier League. So in the end, Kimpembe.
Good to see we got an officiating chat in.
Well, the argument was, like Martin Tyler spoke about, and Alan Smith spoke about yellow cards and refereeing right throughout the commentary, but no one picks up on the fact that maybe it's a bit of an issue in the sport. So Kimpembe, I think that's how you pronounce his name, could easily have seen a second yellow for dragging back Rashford, but didn't. And then Pogba did pick up a second yellow for what was a straight red card offence, but it was already 2-0 by then. So Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they say he's been schooled by Thomas Tuchel, the opposing coach or manager from PSG. But Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is doing well with the cattle he's got, and he's inspiring them, brought out the best in their football in the Premier League. But what he has is Ashley Young, an absolute labourer at right back.
Mm.
Not a natural right back either. He's slow. He's cumbersome. He can't he just does things illegally, not used to playing on a yellow card because he doesn't get one early in the Premier League. Luke Shaw, slow as a wet week down the left fullback role. So you're going back to the Manchester City days when Guardiola turned up and he had slow fullbacks as well as Zabaleta. So that's how you got a hook. You got to hook Ashley Young. I saw the other day Ashley Young up for a new contract renewal. I mean, who are they kidding? That's the first player you got to get rid of.
Good rant, Speedy. Now, prior to that game, plenty of talk that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was going to get the job full time. All of a sudden, they look like they might go out of the Champions League. They've got Chelsea, although Chelsea have got their own problems, in the FA Cup this weekend. And then in the Premier League the week after, they've got Liverpool. So amazing how football works. You're flying one day, a couple of losses, and all of a sudden your job's under your long-term future is probably under question.
So do you think it'll be settled after this next 3 weeks to a month of football? Do you think that's what the power brokers are waiting for? The boat has now been rocked by this loss, probably out of the Champions League, which is a massive blow. So then, okay, well, it would have been tough for us not to give him the job, given what's happened. We still can make inroads in the Premier League. Do we bite the bullet and do something now because we know what we're doing, or do we wait and see how this unfolds against some big opponents?
Have we regularly seen in sport across the world, not just football, that a new coach comes in and there's the new coach bounce for a while, particularly when you replace them with a club legend?
It's been a big bounce, though, in fairness to him.
It's been a good bounce. Yeah, it's been a very good bounce. Although a lot of people will say that they haven't really been tested, that their only really good win was against Spurs, where they were very lucky De Gea made something like 8 saves.
Right.
But does the new coach bounce eventually subside, and that's when you need to start thinking more long-term
I think they'll have to decide something pretty soon, and this next group of games gives them the opportunity to make a final assessment.
And he was crueled by injuries today, and they won't get mentioned, but he started with Martial, who went off at half-time. They also lost another player.
Lingard
goes down right before half-time, so they have to bring on Alexis Sanchez, who is just useless at the moment.
Martial's been flying.
Yeah, so not a lot of favours for Solskjaer. You reckon that's going to come into the conversation, though? I mean, this will just be Man U out in the round of 16. Solskjaer's not up to it. PSG's a pretty handy squad.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying, Speedy. You know, the people making this decision are hopefully a little bit more resistant to the populist discussion that goes around coaching appointments. You would like to think that they've been making a forensic analysis on what he's done, what he's had to deal with, all the things you've brought up. Surely people at the club are making this analysis of what he's had to deal with, what he's been up against, how good he is, and then in a few weeks' time with some big tests, make a decision.
Given the way life's going, I'm sure they'll just put a poll on a website.
Whoever wins,
they'll go out and get.
That's right.
Isn't that how it works?
Zinedine Zidane.
Finally, congratulations to all involved in the freedom, I guess, if you like, of Hakeem Al-Arabi, particularly Craig Foster, John Didalitza from the PFA, Brendan Schwab, Andrew Asadi, and Francis Awaratifi, an incredible achievement from a lot of people who were incredibly driven to free this man from jail hubs.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've outlined some of the key football people,
yeah,
the community in general.
It's a football podcast.
The PFA as an organisation and the international network of that, fantastic. But it goes beyond. It's a big team effort. You know, government, diplomats, human rights watch people. But you know what? This is what rings in my ears now. The price of freedom is eternal vigilance. It's not over for Hakeem. I heard someone on the radio from his community talking about whilst his immediate passage has been secured, he's still got family in Bahrain and they're very worried about possible exposure to those. And this has just opened a lot of people's eyes to the very, very complex and murky world of international politics. The price of freedom is eternal vigilance.
And I know everyone's getting a universal rap, but for me, I don't think it happens. May never have happened without Craig Foster. I think he's 100%. So far at the forefront of what happened.
Speedy, you and I have been working with professional athletes for a long time, and I'm sure you do, think to myself, what does it take to be a professional athlete? And it takes an incredible amount of drive and determination and single-mindedness. And having watched Craig Foster and what he's done over the past six weeks or however long it's been, you can understand why he was such a great footballer, because it's just incredible when they get the bit between their teeth, this is what's happening, and I'm going to do everything I possibly can to make it happen. And he obviously was the same like that as a player, as you would know, Hubs.
And then the final PR masterstroke last week when Hakeem arrives in shackles and Fozzie set himself up right next to the gate as Hakeem was going to go through, and they had the cameras sorted out, and you had Craig Foster with the poise saying, you know, Australia's behind you, we're here, you're not alone, your wife sends her love. It was just wonderful imagery that the rest of the world saw and went, this is just shit. Let's turn this around. And that's when it really got the groundswell going. So brilliant utilisation of PR and the resources by Craig Foster, and just so far ahead of the pack. Well played.
Short price favourite for 2020 Australian of the Year, you'd have to think. This weekend, A-League starts Friday night with a big game, actually. And it should be pointed out, this is a rescheduled match, so don't let this one slip past you. It's about 5:30 Australian Eastern Daylight Time on Friday, Wellington versus Melbourne Victory. And then straight after that, Newcastle versus Melbourne City. So a double header on the Friday night with an early kickoff. And then Saturday, we've got the W League Grand Final, which we've mentioned, with a 4 p.m. start to our coverage, 4:30 kickoff Australian Eastern Daylight Time for Sydney up against Perth Glory and Sam Kerr. And then
whereabouts? You better tell people where it's at.
Yeah, that's at Jubilee.
Cogra.
Cogra, if you like. I think it's just got a new naming rights sponsor, but I can't think who that is. And Adelaide versus Western Sydney is a 7:30 Eastern kickoff, well, 7:50 Eastern kickoff, and then a late game on the Saturday night, which is Perth versus Brisbane. And then on Sunday, I'm told there's going to be a big crowd at Leichhardt for Sydney FC up against the Central Coast Mariners, so it should be a great weekend.
So Sydney FC are playing in a W League Grand Final on Saturday,
yep,
and they're playing in the A League on the Sunday. Why wasn't that made into some sort of double header?
Because unfortunately, the facilities at Leichhardt Oval don't allow for two dressing rooms for males and females.
Was it even considered?
Well, there was a discussion about whether the men's or women's teams could get changed across the road at the Aquatic Centre to try and maximise the crowd.
Yeah.
But I think that was quickly ruled out.
Why? What was the problem with that?
Well, because...
As a one-off thing for a big day?
Because clubs like Adelaide haven't been able to host W League, A League doubleheaders because they don't have the facilities.
Yeah, but it's grand finals, big day. Can we not just make some contingency so that the girls, the women can play in front of a packed house?
Have the blokes using the dressing room in the Aquatic Centre?
Yeah. Well, that would send a good message, wouldn't it?
Was this discussed, Maz? Yeah. I'm not trying to be problematic here.
I think it was.
Were the players asked if they'd mind from this one thing?
Who makes these calls at the FFA? Is it Gallup or is it Rourke? Or
head of the W League, it's Greg O'Rourke.
Yeah. Greg O'Rourke.
Yeah. I think it's disappointing that they couldn't have somehow maximised the crowd that's going to be at Leichhardt on Sunday for the W League, because what will you get? How many people will be at Jubilee on Saturday afternoon?
Well, hopefully,
probably 4,000 to 5,000, which is W League grand.
Yeah. A pump up of Sam Kerr means we get 8,000 or 10,000, but maybe it's unlikely.
Still shy of 16, 17, 18, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is what you'll get at Leichhardt for a doubleheader.
So you would have either had to play that before the A-League. Mm. The A-League's a 5 o'clock kickoff, so you're probably looking at a 2 o'clock kickoff, or you probably would have played it after and had a night game at like an 8 o'clock kickoff.
Could you have moved the A-League to like 3:30? Is that too hard? Because A-League set in stone at 5. Could you have...
I think they're all options.
Why wouldn't the A-League just move to 3:30 and then have W-League blockbuster 5:30 bang?
Or play the A-League at 7 o'clock later in the evening, which has been a popular time for viewing for A-League games this season, and move the W-League grand final to like 4:30.
Yeah, maybe we should bring Greg O'Rourke on next time for a brainstorm on the Baldcast, and he'll actually come up with a good solution.
Now one way or the other, I'm sure we will all...
One way or the other, I'm going to get you.
He's on fire.
I'm
going to
get you.
All you have to do is mention Aunt Ashley Young to him, and all of a sudden he turns into Bruce Springsteen.
Andy Harpeth, good to have you
present
in here and joining us rather than on the ranch. Hopefully you can do it again sometime soon. Brenton Speed, enjoy calling the W League Grand Final.
And Ashley Young's a great player. Good player.
There it was. The speed backflip. I'm Murray Shaw.
There's a lot of displacement. in what, a speed backflip.
When he does
when
a backflip.
When he actually lands in the water, it's a lot of displacement.
I think you'd need to see a chiro, a physio. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Baldcast Footballed. We'll be back again next Wednesday. And don't forget, Daniel Garb and Simon Hill will be with you on Monday for the general weekly look at the weekend.
Do they pump
football.
Up our podcast?
Of course they do.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's very collegiate here.
A lot of love.
In the Fox Football podcast. That's Phil Pryor making a cameo very, very late in the podcast. And thanks for your contribution,
Phil. I thought it was a gremlin. It was not a gremlin. That's actually the panel operator.
Thanks for your contribution, Lucky Phil. And we'll see you all next week. Thanks.